Alrighty, what's up, everybody? How's it going out there? YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TikTok. We're live on TikTok right now. We got 115 people out here on TikTok, 119 now. How are you? Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you. Did you know that you can say that? Did you know that that's allowed? We're going to be talking about that a lot on the episode today. I just said it. How fucking crazy is that? I'm going to get canceled here. I'm going to get fully canceled. Like, I'm a leftist atheist, and I just said Merry Christmas. The woke police, the woke mob, they're going to come and shut me down for saying that. You're not allowed. I don't know if you guys knew this, but they're saying it's all over the news. It's on Fox News. It's on Twitter for the last 20 years-ish. You're not allowed to say it. We're going to get into that. We're going to break it down. We're going to get into it. But let's talk a little bit just about like some odds and ends. How am I doing? I'm doing all right. The year is coming to a close. How do I feel? I'll tell you. I'll be honest. We'll get into just a little mental health check. I decided to give myself permission in this month of December to sort of coast down to the end of my year in a pretty chill way. I was like, I'm not going to like do a sprint to the end of the year and try to like really close out strong. I feel really good about this year, about things that I accomplished professionally, personally, spiritually, emotionally. I feel good. And I decided that I was going to like keep December as chill as possible. And I've been trying to do that. But with that comes the guilt of like not working harder and feeling like I'm sort of like sluggishly like rolling to the end of what was a pretty good year. And I'm getting caught up in a little bit of that, like winter blues and winter sadness and winter insecurity of like, did I do enough? Was this year productive enough? Did I accomplish enough things? And I do think I did. I think I'm fine, but it's just that's what happens the second that I hit the brakes on anything. I like to work and stay busy and stay moving forward. And the second that I give myself permission to slow down, I feel guilty. The second that I do anything that feels like I'm just trying to like indulge in a little self-care, it's really easy for me to get guilty. I was thinking about this the other day. I drove my friends to the airport. They were going to LAX, and I asked them if they had a ride, and they were like, yeah, we were just going to take an Uber. And I said, oh, I'll take you. And they said, you're always doing that. You're always like offering to help people. You're always, and I was like, well, I think it's the way I was raised. I give Mormons a lot of credit for this. Mormons are very service oriented people. And I was raised in a community and in a family that was very, service oriented. And I think that's a great thing. I think it's a great way to live your life, to be like always on the hunt for an opportunity to show up for the people in your life, to show up for friends and family and even strangers. Like I try to look on a day-to-day basis for a way to be of service to either my community or my friends and my family. I try. I don't always accomplish it, but I try to set out on every day to find at least one way to be of service. And I think I'm just trying to keep up with, again, like the family I was raised in. My parents are very service-oriented people, and I feel like I'm falling short of some kind of expectation or goal. And when I don't find someone to be of service to in a day, but I also think, and this is the realization that I had, is like I feel like the most selfish and self-centered and self-absorbed person in my family and in my like circle of friends that I went to high school with. And I was talking about this with a friend the other day, and she was like, why do you feel selfish? Like, what do you do that makes you feel selfish? And I was like, my whole life, just the way that I've set my life up. I decided by like 18 that I was going to go after the thing that I wanted to do. And the thing, like, I decided really early on, young, at a very young age, that like, I knew what I wanted and that it was going to be very hard to dissuade me away from going after what I wanted. And I feel like I look at the other people in my life, like when I go home to Utah and I spend time with family and friends, and I want to be really clear here that this is not an indictment of anyone in my life. This is not an indictment of my family. This is not an indictment of my friends. This is not calling them out in any way, because they're not doing this. They're not making me feel this way. They're not saying anything or imposing anything on me to make me feel this way. This is all just like going on internally inside of me. This is all just internal monologue stuff. But when I go home, I get this feeling that like, I feel like a pariah. When I'm in LA, being a a 35-year-old man who's never been married and doesn't have kids and who is really focused on his career isn't that weird. There's a lot of people in their 30s who are dating and single and not married and don't have kids. That's not that weird in LA. In Utah, with my family and with the people that I grew up with, I'm an outlier. Pretty much all of my close friends that I grew up with, went to elementary school with, middle school with, high school with, they are all married and have multiple kids. They got the home, they got the job, they got all the stuff. And my family is the same way. And I feel like part of living a life like that, part of living a life that is built around long-term monogamous companionship and building a family, is sacrificing a certain amount of like surely I have a lot of friends and family who had goals or dreams in mind in their life that they had to go, you know what, that's not practical if I want to be able to take care of a family, for instance. If I want to be able to make enough money to provide for a family, if I want to make enough money to afford a mortgage by 25, I've got to start looking at career options that maybe aren't my first choice, or maybe aren't the thing that I have always dreamed of doing my whole life, but it's something that can allow me to show up for this family that I'm building, these kids. It's a very unselfish way of living, a way of living that involves a lot of compromise and a lot of sacrifice and a lot of doing things that maybe aren't necessarily the thing that you would choose first to do, but you're choosing it in the name of having this other thing. And so because I chose to be a person who was like, no, I'm going to go after the thing. I want it, and I don't want anything else nearly as bad as I want this. I feel like I'm starting at the starting point as a more selfish person than these other people. And so I got to like do more to make sure I'm showing up and being of service for the people in my life, for my nieces and nephews, for my brothers and sisters, for my friends and family. And also just for strangers again. But like, I think in that, I've been living with so much shame about like, I'm not doing enough, I'm not doing enough, I'm not being of service enough. And living with so much shame about like just the fact that I live my life the way that I do is so fundamentally selfish, that I forget that like a service-oriented life can also and should also include giving yourself permission to be of service to yourself from time to time. It's okay to choose things that you know you want and to go after those things and to make decisions that are in service of yourself in a way where you're like honoring yourself and loving yourself. That's good stuff. And I think I too often associate that stuff with like being selfish or self-absorbed or narcissistic. And I think there is a line and a difference between self-absorption, narcissism, egotism, and having a healthy regard, a healthy knowledge of your own needs and desires, and nurturing that. And also I don't think actually that it's fundamentally selfish or bad to not be married and to not have kids. I think that there are a lot of societal pressures that push people into that way of living. There's a lot of societal pressures that people are raised with, not just like in the community where I was raised in Mormonism. It's definitely there in Mormonism, but it's really everywhere in society, this pressure to like, there's a certain way that your life is supposed to go. You're supposed to be looking for a companion to marry, to build a family with. And it's okay if you don't do that. You're not like a bad or selfish or less developed person, you know, if you choose to not go that route. And I'm trying to come to terms with that. I'm trying to give myself a break. I'm trying to allow myself to be okay with the fact that I did do enough this year, that I am enough, and that it's okay that I'm having sort of a slow, sauntering December. I'll get back to the grind life in January. One of my big Christmas gifts I'm trying to give myself is just letting myself off the hook for some stuff. I got to do this all the time. I got to remember this stuff all the time. And anyway, that's my mental health check-in and notice at the beginning of the thing. Let's get into a segment we haven't done in a while. We're going to do a little down, down, the bad take brigade. I still don't have the official drop for that sound made yet. And I don't think I'm going to make it this December. Maybe I'll make it in January. Maybe when I get back on my hustle life, I'll make an official ba-bam-bam. the Bad Take Brigade sound drop, but not now. For now, you just get me doing it with my mouth, and you have to imagine what it will sound like when it's fully made. Ba-bow, bow. The Bad Take Brigade. This is where we go around the internet, and we look for people who have had bad takes recently and critique their bad takes. There's so many that we could talk about right now. It's been, like, weeks long of the right dancing in glee on Twitter about just the war for free speech and how Elon Musk is this hero of free speech and how it's so important that we keep Elon Musk in power because he's this champion of free speech. And there's so many bad takes from like the last like 6 weeks about what free speech is and how people misconstrue what it is and how garbage that whole entire talking point is, because Elon Musk is not so much a champion of free speech as he is a guy who bought a platform so that he could be the person who gets to censor people, because he's still censoring plenty of people. He's like censoring journalists that criticize him. He's silencing accounts that shared the video of him getting booed at the Dave Chappelle show. He's silencing basically any account that has a tweet that's too popular that's making fun of him or being critical of him. He's censoring, he shut down Kanye West's account because Kanye West is not good at dog whistling, and he always says the quiet part out loud. He just was like tweeting photos of swastikas and like saying that he loves Hitler and stuff. So Elon Musk was like, we have to shut him down in for his mental health. It's for his own good. But it's like, well, that's not how you guys talk about free speech. You talk about free speech as being like just this thing that means that anyone can say anything and that you shouldn't be a snowflake about it, and that like you shouldn't get upset about any language, no matter how offensive it is. Like everything is on the table. That's how conservatives talk about free speech. But the problem that Elon Musk and most conservative talking heads have with the Kanye situation is he's just not good at subtlety. He's not good at saying the racist thing or the white supremacist thing or the Nazi thing without saying it, but like wink winking at it. He just says it and they're like, you can't do that, man. So Elon shut his account down. He shut down accounts of people who impersonated him when he first rolled out Twitter Blue, and people were like, cool, we're going to show you why verification is important, because anyone can now just change their name to Elon Musk and have a blue check mark and they can say anything. And that's, we're going to just kind of demonstrate to you why verification, what it actually is and why it matters and why it's not just a thing that you should allow people to buy. So after people did that, he made a new rule that said, if anyone impersonates anyone, your account will be banned permanently. But that wasn't a rule when those people did that, but their accounts still got banned. So like this whole thing, I mean, man, if you're not on Twitter, the conservatives have been going wild about how excited they are to be in control, even though there are plenty of studies that have shown that like over the last 10 years, Twitter has had a right-leaning bias. Everyone always thinks that Jack Dorsey and the current Twitter moderation team had a left-leaning bias. The problem with American politics and the public discourse is that the mainstream right wing is so extreme that it drags everything to the right. So like there are extremes on both sides, on the left and the right, but the left wing extreme has no mainstream representation. There is no mainstream representation for like far left, you know, radical anarchy and complete deconstruction of modern capitalism. Like there is no mainstream representation for that. There is no political representation for that. All left-wing politicians skew toward the center, and like even some the center right, you know, see Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, who has now said she's no longer a Democrat, as though she ever was. But like that is the state of the left on politics, is that the right is so owned by the extremism. Like the right, their media heads, their politicians are all entrenched in the far extreme views that it drags everything to the right. So even Twitter's previous content moderation had a right-leaning bias, but whatever, they all thought that it was left-leaning. It wasn't. There's plenty of studies that have been done to show this. Now Elon Musk took over. They're all like thrilled because this is a victory for free speech. And the guy has done like nothing but censor people the entire time that he's been in charge, people that he doesn't like. It's very clear that all he had interest in doing from the jump was just being the guy who got to say who stays and who goes. But there's too many of those bad takes for me to focus in on just one. I just wanted to sort of address the general malaise of how stupid people are with this whole free speech fight and war. But I do want to focus in on one tweet from the Monty Python man himself, John Cleese. If you're not aware of this, John Cleese has sort of had like a disturbing pattern over the last like year or two of being yet another celebrity who's like getting more radicalized to the right because of like quote unquote woke culture. That's another bad take I could have done, is Elon Musk talking about like the woke mind virus. And what it really boils down to is like people from old people from a previous generation who don't like that jokes that they used to make are being like called into question in today's society. That people are looking at their body of work and going, you know what, that joke that you told 30 years ago doesn't really hold up today and wouldn't really fly today. And they're like, oh, you can't fucking say anything. And it radicalizes. It starts off as just a thing of like, I don't like that people are criticizing my jokes. And it starts innocently, and it always like creates this sliding effect to being fully radicalized. That's where Elon started. Elon just started it being like, I don't know, the left is getting too extreme these days, meaning like he didn't like that he had to respect people's pronouns. Like that was the big problem for him. And that's where it started for him. And he's like, I'm not left or right. I'm an independent. I'm a centrist. And he just has now gone full blown MAGA. He's now just full on the right, like full on pandering to right wing extremists and using right wing extremist dog whistles. And, you know, and that's, I'm afraid that's sort of what's happening slowly but surely with our pal John Cleese, who we can give credit to for being a part of a very influential and legendary comedy troupe. But somebody shared on Twitter this clip, this old Monty Python clip, and they said, For anyone wondering why Elon Musk loves Monty Python, this is them 40 years ahead of their time. John Cleese quote tweeted it and said, no complaints about this scene for 45 years, but they will start anytime next week. Well, John, I'm going to start now. I'm going to start this week. I'm going to go ahead and tell you why this clip from 40 years ago is stupid and doesn't really work, and why people are going to tell you why it doesn't work. And it's okay. I get historical context. I get that at the time that this skit was made, people weren't really having conversations about this topic in this way in the mainstream. So this was pretty radical, honestly, for them to be talking about this. But there's a pretty simple reason why this doesn't work, and I'm going to say it, but let's listen to the clip. This is an old Monty Python skit. We'll listen to it and break it down.
Yeah, I think Judith's point of view is very valid, Rich, provided the movement never forgets that it is the inalienable right of every man
or woman
to rid himself
or herself.
Agreed.
Thank you, brother.
Or sister.
I love the way that this starts. I do. I genuinely think that it's a funny start. Like any man or woman, you know, like that little back and forth is classic Monty Python. It's just like wordplay that's fun. It's a play on how sometimes like the desire to be inclusive with your language can be frustrating. Like this person's just trying to get out this this decree, this manifesto, this declaration of their ideology, but keeps being interrupted by the fact that his language is limiting, that he keeps saying like any man who wants or woman, thank you, brother, or sister. Like it's funny. It's good wordplay. The skit goes on.
Thank you, brother, or sister.
Where was I?
I think you finished.
Oh, right.
Like, that's funny. Where was I? I think you finished. He didn't finish. He was, like, just beginning, but because he got interrupted so many times, he can't even remember what he was saying. That's funny.
Furthermore, it is the birthright of every man
or woman.
Why don't you shut up about women, Stan? You're putting us off.
Women have a perfect right to play a part in our movement, Reg.
Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
But why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
So far, there's no problems. This is what I mean when I say, like, at the time that this skit was released, 45 years ago, this is pretty radical. This is a pretty radical thing to be doing as this comedy troupe, to be like, like, they were always doing skits where there were people talking about deconstructing the oppressive governmental systems and stuff that were in power, and that's what this group is doing. And this person is introducing the idea of saying, I want to be recognized as a woman. And they're actually having a conversation about it. Just having the skit that's having the conversation was pretty fucking progressive for the time. And, like, and so far it's also, like, pretty funny the way that it's represented. See, I'll even grant them that, like, I can laugh at the wordplay of, why do you want to be a woman? Well, because it's my right as a man. I think that that's funny that, like, as a man in a society, in a patriarchal society, this man feels it is his right as a man to identify as a woman. Like, the male entitlement that's wrapped up in there, I can even say, great, we're so far no problems. We're about to encounter where the thing starts to go off the rails.
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus gonna gestate? You're gonna keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry.
What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies?
It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
That's the clip. Okay, so that's what it finally gets to. What is the point of us fighting for his right to have babies? The other person says, it is symbolic of our struggle against oppression. He answers, it's symbolic of his struggle against reality. Ba-dum-chish. That's the joke. That was a really bad drum roll that I just did with my mouth. But that's the bit, okay? That's the end of the joke. That's the punchline. The problem with this bit is it's based in a massive straw man. And now you could just say, it's just a joke. But the joke that they're making, the joke that they think that they're making, the joke that John Cleese is proud of, and the point that he thinks is so clever is, like, that fundamentally there is something about the trans rights movement and trans people asking for equal representation and equal consideration in society is fundamentally kind of silly, because at the bottom of it all, trans people aren't really dealing in reality. Like, they're not being realistic. And you hear this all the time. You see different ways that people make this kind of bad faith, bad argument, and they'll frame it as a joke. But the entire thing is that the reason why Stan wants to be called Loretta is because Stan wants to have babies. This is just a premise that does, this is the thing that doesn't exist in reality. This does not exist. This is not why trans women want to be identified as women in society. It's not because they are people who were born with male genitalia who want to have babies. I'm not going to speak for all trans women. I'm not going to say that there might not be a desire in some trans women to be like, man, I wish. I'm sure that there is a contingency of trans women who are like, I wish I had been born with the anatomical ability to have babies, but I wasn't. But this is not the reason why trans women want to be identified in society as women. Not because they want to have babies. Even if they can't, I want to be able to have the right to have babies, so that the punchline of the joke can be, well, you're not living in reality. This straw man is made over and over and over again against trans people. This joke is 45 years old, and it still happens today. There's a popular video going around on TikTok right now of a trans woman who's saying, day 10 of being a woman, and today I'm going to go buy tampons. Wish me luck. A bunch of people have stitched her video and been like, and put them where? Where are you going to put those tampons? Like, what? With the insinuation that this trans woman is delusional, that she does not have the anatomy to necessitate tampons, that she does not menstruate, therefore does not need to have tampons, that she's living in some kind of, she's performing some kind of delusional reality where she's pretending to be a person who menstruates when really she doesn't. That's not what's happening in that clip. Trans women are not saying, I demand that everyone pretend I am capable of menstruation. That is not a thing that trans people are saying. This is a straw man position. What that woman in that clip is doing when she says, I'm going to go purchase tampons, is she's saying, I'm going to have tampons in my purse so that when my women friends who are born and assigned female at birth are on their periods and maybe they were out in public and they don't have a tampon with them, I can give them a tampon. I can help them out with that. That's all she's saying. But by framing it as though she's making some unreasonable, unrealistic claim about her anatomy that doesn't exist. You see this too with people, with the way that people argue about transgender athletes in sports, and it's always specifically trans women. People will break it down to like this thing of like, we gotta be, I talked about this in my episode on why you're probably wrong about trans athletes, but that people break it down to like, come on, at the very bottom of it, we got to be honest about the fact that there are chromosomal makeups here. There are biological realities at play here. There is XX and XY. That's just what there are, and we can't pretend that they're not. First of all, and I talked about this in that episode, but I will repeat it. First of all, that is not actually biologically correct. There are not just two chromosomal makeups that humans can have. There are more. There are different combinations that we can have. Predominantly in our society, predominantly in our species, people who are assigned female at birth have XX chromosomes, and people who are assigned male at birth have XY chromosomes. Predominantly, but not in all the cases. There are plenty of people who have different combinations or who have a chromosomal makeup that does not align with their anatomical makeup. All the time, we see that. So just right off the bat, that's not a clear-cut biological binary. That is a myth. Second of all, again, it is a straw man. No one who is saying we need to validate trans identities and recognize trans women as women is saying you need to pretend that this person's chromosomes are XX and not XY. No one is making that argument. So when you break it down to that and go, come on, what are we doing here? All the people in the pool have XX chromosomes and this other person has XY chromosomes and those two things are just fundamentally not the same. It's like, yeah, okay, what if everyone in the pool had blue eyes and one person had brown eyes? Would you get that arbitrary about it? And the other thing is, no one is saying that this other person actually has XX chromosomes or that we should pretend that they do. That is not the argument that is being made. The argument that is being made is that gender is a social construct. That is, it is a social performance that we have created in our society, in our species. We have created roles to be performed by people traditionally, typically, who have different anatomical makeups and who have been assigned a designation. They have been assigned a societal classification as woman or man from the moment that they were born. What we have found out through non-binary people and trans people throughout history that have always existed is that those two gender classifications are limiting, that humans do not actually exist in one of these two clear-cut boxes, and that they are also not always in alignment with whatever anatomical makeup or chromosomal makeup you were born with. That is what we have found, is that there are people who were born with XY chromosomes and who were born with a outward-facing anatomy that would have a doctor assign them male at birth, who internally their entire lives have gone, I think I want to be in the societal classification of woman. That feels correct to me. I want to be identified as a woman. So I am going to now take measures to transition my outward appearance and my societal relationships so that people now see me and identify me as a woman, and I am going to live my life as a woman, performing the societal function of a woman. That is what I'm going to do. And that is all people are saying. That is all trans people are saying, is I have a way that I feel that does not coincide with the box I was placed in at my birth, and I am going to transition so that people will recognize and respect me as the thing that feels like it more correctly aligns with the way that I identify and feel internally. No one has ever been saying, I want you to, someone in the comments on TikTok just popped up with another straw man. They said, I feel black. Can I say that? Can I say I feel like I'm another, like my skin is another color than it is? Can I say that? Again, That is not an argument that anyone is making. You are you. This is a perfect example. You are using a straw man argument. Too many people don't understand what a straw man is. When I make my videos where I'm playing two characters that are debating with each other, and like one character is like over the top caricature of conservatives, and the other character is like a, you know, more reasonable, level-headed leftist, people always say that I'm straw manning. That's not what a straw man is. People in YouTube are freaking out that they couldn't hear the clip. Read the chat! Nobody can hear the clip! Read the chat! Nobody can hear it! It's fine. It'll be on the audio version, and I'll edit it into the YouTube version later. But freaking out, like literally losing their shit over here. We couldn't hear the clip! But you are making a straw man argument. So when I'm doing that character in those scenes that I do, people will say, you're making a straw man. They think it's a straw man because they don't like the way that I'm portraying it in my performance, but I'm using arguments that are just word-for-word arguments that I've seen conservative talking heads and politicians make hundreds of times. I am not intentionally misrepresenting the arguments that are coming from the right in order to make my position seem stronger or more reasonable. That is what a straw man argument is. That is what a straw man fallacy is when you intentionally misrepresent the argument that your opposition is making to make your own position seem stronger. So you could say that me performing this character as though they are goofy or stupid is the straw man, that I'm not letting them seem intelligent. But the bottom line of that is, like, I just don't think that their positions are intelligent, and I think that they are goofy. Also, like, there are people like Walter Masterson, who I'm going to talk about later on this show, who he does this whole bit where he goes out and confronts these people in real life at rallies. He goes to Trump rallies and things like that, and he basically does the character that I do on TikTok. He dresses up with like a camouflage hat and a red, white, and blue shirt and a megaphone, and he interviews people pretending to be a Trumper, and he's super over the top about it, and he's doing this big over the top caricature of like what a traditional conservative looks like and sounds like, and nobody realizes that he's making fun of them. Nobody realizes that he's doing a bit. So like, I also don't think that my characterization is a misrepresentation. Like, I'm doing the performance as accurately as I possibly can. And if it seems like I'm making fun, it's more just a commentary on how absurd these people really are. But that's not what a straw man is. I'm still using their correct arguments. I'm still doing my best to represent their argument in as accurate a manner as I possibly can, because I don't feel like I need to misrepresent their argument to make their argument seem weaker. What you're doing when you're saying, well, what if I, oh yeah, so I can just, oh, I can just say that I'm black now. Oh, I feel black on the inside. I'm going to change my race. That's not a thing that anyone's doing. It's the same thing that you're doing when you're saying, oh, what? So what? We got to pretend that someone with XY chromosomes has XX chromosomes? No. No one is asking you to do that. You're misrepresenting the argument so that you can sound more reasonable. You're intentionally misrepresenting the argument. You're contending with an argument that no one is making. And that is the problem with this clip in this Monty Python thing, is their entire premise of their joke is based on something that no one in the transgender community is arguing. No one is saying, I want to be identified as a woman because I want to have babies. And I want you all to pretend that that is a thing that I am biologically capable of doing. That is not an argument that anyone is making. So the punchline, well, it's representative of your fight against reality, doesn't make any sense. Because that's not a thing that's actually real. So the thing that's not real is the premise of the joke. The premise of the joke that what transgender women want is to be recognized as a person who is capable of having children. That is not real. So the person who is outside of reality in this instance is John Cleese, with a premise that does not exist in reality. Anyway, too many people use straw man arguments to argue against trans rights and just the reality that trans women are women. It's way too common of a problem, and so many of the arguments that are used are straw man arguments. Like, you are arguing against a premise that does not exist. Yes, we've got a conservative in the comments on TikTok saying, you mean birthing persons? This is a great example of just a pivot. This is like a person who doesn't have a response to anything I just said, so is pivoting to the fact that like some people use the term birthing persons or people capable of pregnancy or people or pregnant people because we are trying to use language that's inclusive of trans men or non-binary people who have uteruses. Like, yeah. Inclusive language. I know it's so silly how some people try to use language that's inclusive of people who exist. It's just so silly, but that doesn't do anything to contend with the point that I was making about how all you have is straw man arguments that no one's actually making. Like even that right there, I'm like, you didn't do anything there. You just pointed out that sometimes people on the left try to use inclusive language. Speaking of inclusive language, let's get to the main meat of the show, the main point of the show. Speaking of inclusive language and straw man arguments, let's talk about the war on Christmas. One of the good old tried and true straw man arguments that has come to be just a time-honored tradition of the modern American conservative party. I just burped, excuse me. Is this idea every Christmas we got to roll it out like clockwork. We got to roll it out this idea that there's a war on Christmas, that you can't say Merry Christmas anymore, that you can't even have Christmas decorations up anymore. I mean, you want to talk about people who are at war with reality? You want to talk about people who are in a struggle with reality? It is these people. It is people who literally look around them at every year, November through December, and see that there is nothing on the radio but Christmas songs and songs that talk about Christmas, that every store is decorated top to bottom with Christmas decorations and signs that say Merry Christmas, that everywhere they go, that the streets in their cities are lined with wreaths and holly, and every street lamp has a big red bow tied around it, and in every town square there's a Christmas tree, and they see this. And they have the audacity, they have the temerity to somehow pretend like what's actually happening is no one is allowed to celebrate this holiday that is one of the most widely celebrated holidays across the entire world. That no one is allowed to acknowledge that the holiday is happening. You want to talk about a fight against reality. So again, talking about Walter Masterson, which he's a great TikTok account if you're not following him. He's also on Twitter and on Instagram. Fantastic account if you want to follow Walter. He has this great video that he did recently that exemplifies exactly what I'm talking about. He stands, he's doing the character that I was talking about, the over-the-top conservative caricature of a person that conservatives never recognize as a cartoonish representation of themselves that's making fun of them. They don't see it because it's just accurate, and they can talk to this guy who's clearly doing an over-the-top characterization of them, and they don't notice that that's what he's doing. But he stands in Rockefeller Center, which, if you don't know Rockefeller Center at Christmas time, it's famous for having a giant, massive, like 20 stories high Christmas tree. Every year they do this, and the entire plaza is decked out in Christmas decorations, just top to bottom. There's wreaths everywhere, there's angels everywhere, there's Christmas songs playing in the plaza, there's people ice skating, there's Christmas carolers. It's everywhere. So he's interviewing people in Rockefeller Plaza. He's finding conservative people to interview, and he's saying, isn't it so absurd, this war on Christmas, that they're not allowing us to put up Christmas decorations anymore? Isn't it so sad to walk around the city and there's just you wouldn't even notice that it's Christmas? And unironically, he's got these people on camera going, I know, it's really sad. It's really, really upsetting that you can't even say Merry Christmas anymore. It's not even a thing that you can say. Anywhere you look, you don't see Christmas decorations. And he has the cameraman framing them so that directly behind them in the frame is the giant Rockefeller Center Christmas tree. And it doesn't really get more obvious or potent than this to show just how insanely the delusion of the modern conservative party and the modern conservative mindset has become, that you can stand in Midtown Manhattan in December, a place that is just notorious for being decked out with Christmas decorations. They are everywhere. They are in every storefront. They are on every street corner. They are everywhere. And you can stand there and be interviewed by someone who says, isn't it so sad that there's no Christmas decorations around? And you can say with a straight face, being completely serious, yes, that's so sad. I wish that we were allowed to have Christmas decorations. It's truly like psychologically very interesting. Like, it's a very interesting psychological study to question, like, what is happening here? What is taking place? Are these people lying? Are they just so committed to the cause of perpetuating conservative propaganda and conservative talking points that they are knowingly being disingenuous when they answer the question, yes, it's so sad that no one's allowed to have Christmas decorations, even though they are actively surrounded on all sides by very, very visible, very big, very in-your-face Christmas decorations? Are they lying? I don't think they are. This is what's more disturbing. This is what's more weird and psychologically interesting about this whole thing is I don't think that these people, that the average person, now like the Tucker Carlsons and the Sean Hannitys of the world, I do believe that they are being knowingly disingenuous, that they knowingly bring this thing up year after year, this imaginary war on Christmas, because they know exactly how to get their viewers and their base riled up and motivated, and they know which storylines their base responds to. I do believe that there is a faction of people in power in the modern conservative party who are being knowingly disingenuous when they talk about Christmas and the war on Christmas. But I believe the average Joe and Jane that get interviewed on the street in something like this, or that people who talk on TikTok or on social media and say like, man, it's a bummer that we can't say Merry Christmas anymore. Or, you know what? I'm going to say Merry Christmas. And if you agree, say amen. I'm not ashamed to say Merry Christmas. I genuinely believe that there is something going on, that these people are so ideologically beholden to conservatism and to the people who lead the way for them, to Donald Trump, to Tucker Carlson, to Ben Shapiro, to like to Matt Walsh, to these people. They're so beholden to the team mentality, to the tribalism of it, that it actually makes them blind to what is right in front of them in a really weird way, in a really potent, direct way. And it's so strange to witness because, again, like I said in this Walter Masterson clip, it couldn't be more direct. It couldn't be more obvious that you are standing in Rockefeller Center, a place that is famous for its Christmas decorations. And you would have a point if you had shown up in Rockefeller Center in December and gone like, man, I remember a time when there used to be a 50-foot Christmas tree here, and there used to be wreaths everywhere and angels everywhere, and now there's nothing. You would have a point if you showed up and none of that stuff was there. But I can't help but think, what is happening when you are a tourist, a conservative tourist showing up in Manhattan in December, and the stuff is everywhere, and your response to it is, man, it's a bummer that there's no Christmas decorations anywhere. Like, what, genuinely, what is happening? Genuinely, what is happening in your brain? Is there a filter that comes down over your eyes and doesn't allow you to see the myriad of decorations that disprove your entire premise about this made-up war on Christmas? What is happening in your psyche that is not allowing you to see the evidence that your disappointment at the lack of Christmas cheer is not founded? What is genuinely taking place? I've heard this all season long. I hear it every year. It's become a Christmas tradition. I wanted to investigate maybe where this came from a little bit. I looked up, you know, the history of the war on Christmas. How long has this been a thing? It really goes back far. I mean, it goes back all the way to like Henry Ford, all the way back in the day, was saying that he noticed that there was a decided. He said, last Christmas, most people had a hard time finding Christmas cards that indicated in any way that Christmas commemorated someone's birth. This was Henry Ford talking in like the 1920s about this. So this is an old talking point, Christians being afraid of the erasure of their culture. And in some way, I mean, it's got anti-Semitic roots. It's got roots to people, you know, saying that this is the Jewish media that's trying to silence Christian narratives at Christmas time. This is 100 years old. But the modern American war on Christmas, according to a lot of sources that I was looking at and articles that I was reading, they seem to track it back about 20 years to a segment that Bill O'Reilly did on his show. And where he talked about this assault on Christmas, that modern progressives are coming after Christianity in the public square and are trying to institute secular policies by slowly erasing Christianity from public view. Bill O'Reilly said in this 2004 clip, so this is 20 years old, he said, "Secular progressives realize that America, as it is now, will never approve of gay marriage." Boy, he was wrong about that one. I mean, as it is now, and I guess in 2004, "will never approve of gay marriage, partial birth abortion, euthanasia, legalized drugs, income redistribution through taxation, and many other progressive visions because of religious opposition. But if the secularists can destroy religion in the public arena, the brave new progressive world is a possibility." I'm going to go ahead and give Bill credit here and say he's not entirely wrong. I'll just let all you know. I'm going to actually do a thing that most modern conservatives are incapable of and just go ahead and argue from an intellectually honest place that, like, there is a motivation to secularize the public sphere so that we have laws that are not dictated by one overarching, dominating religion. But that is also just like the way that America was supposed to be designed. That is just sort of like as per the founders' intent. Conservatives love talking about the intent of the founders. They made it very, very clear that they wanted a clear delineation between church and state, that they did not want any one church to be able to set laws and rule over the land. They did not want to live in a theocracy. They had come from a theocracy where the church ruled with an iron fist, and they wanted to foster, ideally, an ideologically pluralistic nation. Now, they had lots of problems right off the bat with the genocide of the indigenous population, with slavery, with the treatment of women for the first, 150 years to today of the country, etc. We all know. But the ideal was to create an ideologically pluralistic nation, a secular government, not an authoritarian theocracy, but a secular democracy. And we have had a tough time with that through the history of the country. We have had a tough time with having our government rule in a secular, democratic, ideologically pluralistic way. We have had a hard time having a government that serves all Americans, not just white Christian America. And yes, there is a concerted effort to try to make our government more secular and more pluralistic, and to try to make our government a government that works for everyone who lives here. Because America is so much more than just white Christianity. It is, whether you like it or not, it is a big melting pot. This is a funny thing about, like, conservatives who talk about how, you know, liberals hate America, how leftists hate America and they love America. It's like, we both like and dislike things about the country. I dislike your attempt to make our country an authoritarian Christian theocracy. I feel like that goes against the founding ideals of what America wants to be and is striving to be and is progressing towards slowly but surely and has been progressing towards ever since its inception. I dislike, you know, your idea that we should make America an ethnically cleansed home state for white people, for white Christian people. I dislike that very much, but I do like America's diversity. I like the multiculturalism that exists in metropolitan areas. I like that. I like American art. I like a lot of things about this country. You like the idea of a home state for white Christian people, and you kind of dislike everything else. So we both like and dislike things here. But yeah, I'm going to give Bill O'Reilly this attaboy, this win that, like, yeah, we are trying to secularize the public square because that is how it should be. We are not just a Christian nation. But when it comes to Christmas, like, the thing that's crazy about this is, like, it's just made up bullshit. Like, it like, you won, you know? You won. Like, people who are not Christian at all celebrate Christmas because it's just such a widely recognized holiday. It is so far from being erased in the public sphere. It is nowhere near being a thing that is being successfully silenced or quieted. The idea that, like, you can be publicly shamed for saying Merry Christmas out in public is just a thing that does not exist in objective reality. It's like the people who are incapable of seeing the Christmas decorations right in front of them. Like, I've said Merry Christmas probably 40 times on this podcast so far. No one gives a shit. No one cares. You've probably said it 30 or 40 or 50 or 100 times so far this month. And no one said anything to you. But you are so incapable of living in objective reality, of seeing evidence that makes your talking points potentially wrong, and so incapable of acknowledging that, like, maybe there's nothing to this idea of war on Christmas, that, like, that stuff just goes in one ear and out another. I'm going to do another thing and just read to you really quick for fun, just for funsies. I'm going to read to you just like a handful of titles from this year's lineup of Hallmark Christmas movies. This is just from this year, from 2022's Hallmark slate of movies. These are the titles of these movies in a society, mind you, that is being bombarded, that is having, there is an active war on Christmas. There is an active effort to silence the word Christmas and to silence any mention of Christmas, to take down any decorations that signify that Christmas might be happening. In this society, in the year 2022, where for the last 20 years it has been a time-honored tradition that every year we talk about the war on Christmas, these are just some of the titles of Hallmark's holiday lineup. A Royal Christmas, Crown for Christmas, The Christmas Train, The Christmas House, Christmas in Evergreen, Coming Home for Christmas, A Christmas Detour, Christmas at the Plaza, Catch a Christmas Star, Christmas at Pemberley Manor, A Christmas Miracle, Christmas at Dollywood, Finding John Christmas, A Christmas Melody, Every Christmas Has a Story, A Bride for Christmas, Christmas Everlasting, The Sweetest Christmas, Deliver by Christmas, Father Christmas, The Christmas Ornament, Journey Back to Christmas, Memories of Christmas, Christmas at Cartwright's, The Christmas Cottage, The Christmas Secret, and so forth. Do you get it? I wonder if any conservative people in my comments on TikTok right now or on YouTube, did the filter go up where every time I said Christmas in that last list of movies, you just heard like a brrr, like I said, like, oh, you know, the sweetest brrr, home for brrr, going on a date for brrr, getting my balls licked for brrr. Like, did you hear it? Did you hear it? Did you, what you didn't hear for sure is you didn't hear any, like, here comes Hanukkah. So happy it's Hanukkah. Going on a date for Hanukkah. Can't wait for Kwanzaa. Jump for joy at Kwanzaa. The winter solstice miracle. The sweetest winter solstice. I'm so excited for winter solstice. No titles like that. Just clear-cut domination from one holiday. Just absolute domination. It's inescapable. I think what's so funny to people who live in objective reality about this fantasy of this war on Christmas is that it's so insanely pervasive that the idea that you could be that a person could think that Christmas is, like, under attack or being persecuted in some way is, it's just like, I mean, it makes you think that there's a collective insanity happening in the world, or that we're, like, we're living in two different objective realities, that our universe is effectively split into two realities, because all I see and all I think sane, rational people see at this time of year is Christmas everything. It's everywhere. It's inescapable. It doesn't matter how not Christian you are. You can't escape it. You can't get away from the fact that on December 25th, you're going to be doing something to celebrate with loved ones, regardless of what your beliefs are. I got a video here on TikTok that I'm going to play. And I'm sorry, YouTube, in advance. I'm trying to turn it up as much as possible, this clip. This is from Tom McDonald, you might remember, is the guy with lots of tattoos on his face from Canada who made the video where he was like, My generation was driving by the age of 14. Your generation has 389 genders and can't make up their mind on what pronouns they want to be called. He made that video that was full of straw man arguments and bad faith arguments. He's back. So it's Tom McDonald with his dumbass face tattoos, Christmas edition. Let's listen to what Tom McDonald has to say about the very real war on Christmas.
We all know you're not allowed to say Merry Christmas anymore.
Right off the bat, he says, okay, so we all know that we're not allowed to say Merry Christmas anymore. You just said it, Tom. You just said it. I just said it. We both just said it, and we're fine. No one's coming to bang down our door. The Christmas police aren't coming. The anti-Christmas woke left police aren't coming to cancel you, Tom. You just fucking said it. Like, do words not mean the things that they mean anymore? I feel like when I engage in these conversations with these people, we are living in two separate objective realities. They have their own language that you need to be able to decipher. Because I could see how I could go, hey, you're definitely allowed to say Merry Christmas. He's saying that we're not allowed to say Merry Christmas. We're definitely allowed. And I could see how a conservative apologist would say that's not what he means. He means that some people would prefer that you say Happy Holidays and they might, you know, get a little bit miffed if you say Merry Christmas. Okay, well then say that. That's not what he said. He said we're not allowed to say it, even though we definitely, definitely are. It's like Trump saying that the Constitution should be terminated. He said that. He wrote a post on Truth Social where he called for the termination of the Constitution. And his followers, of course, his apologists say, oh, well, that's not really what he meant. Well, he said the word termination. Do words mean what they mean or don't they?
You can identify as a fucking ceramic lawn gnome, but you can't say Merry Christmas.
Once again, just want to point out that he said that you can't say Merry Christmas. He said, you can identify as a ceramic lawn gnome, but you can't say Merry Christmas, as in cannot. He just said that he cannot say the phrase that he then said, the phrase that I have said, because you actually can say it and you are allowed to. There is no law that says you cannot. There is no rule, official or implied, that says that you are not allowed to say that phrase. Also, Tom, what the ever-loving fuck are you talking about, dude? Again, we go back to the strawman arguments about trans people. You can identify as a fucking ceramic lawn gnome, is what Tom says. This is another favorite go-to strawman argument from conservatives who don't have a legitimate argument again as to why they want to dehumanize and degrade a huge swath of the population. So I have to respect the fact that there are people who were assigned a certain gender at birth but identify as another gender. Well, okay, so what next? People who want to identify as ceramic lawn gnomes? No, because no one fucking said that, Tom. No one said anything even close to that. That's a rather insane logical leap that you're making to the next thing. Again, just a straw man thing. It's like when gay marriage was being debated. It's still being debated. But when we were, you know, making it finally legal in the United States and everyone, so now what? People are going to want to marry their dogs? People are going to want to marry their goats and their cows now? Is that what's next? No, that's not what's next, because that's not a thing that anyone is trying to get legalized. That's not a thing that anyone is arguing for. We are arguing for the right of consenting adults to marry each other. And that's it. Consenting adults, and that's it. And no one else. It's not a slippery slope. It's not up next. It's not up next we want people to be able to marry dogs. Nope. It's a whole other thing. That's a whole different thing that no one is talking about. So now people want to be ceramic lawn gnomes? Tom, has anyone told you that they identify as a ceramic lawn gnome? Is that a thing that you've heard someone say? Again, I've got a question if we are living in two different realities. If we are living in a reality where, like, people like Tom are dealing with, like, a massive part of the population that is fighting for their right to be recognized as ceramic lawn gnomes, like, is that a thing that's happening in Tom's universe? Is that a thing that's happening in the universe of these conservative people with their strawman arguments? Because it's not happening in my universe, empirically. It's just not happening. That's not a thing. He states it so matter of the fact. Look, we all know that you can't say Merry Christmas. It's totally okay to identify as a ceramic lawn gnome, but you can't say Merry Christmas. He states it like it's a thing we all agree on. Like, just in objective reality, we all know that these things are true. None of that shit is true, man! None of that shit is even close to true!
All I'm saying is, if we're not allowed to say Merry Christmas because it's not inclusive of the folks who don't celebrate Christmas, then your solution, Happy Holidays, is actually even less inclusive. Happy isn't inclusive of all the sad and miserable folks, and Holidays isn't inclusive of the people who don't celebrate holidays at all.
Yeah, okay, so we talked earlier about inclusive language, you know, and that pesky thing that leftists like to do, just using language like people who get pregnant, or pregnant persons, or birthing persons, to include trans men and non-binary people who have uteruses, who have the capability of becoming pregnant. Just inclusive language. So literally, that's all Happy Holidays is. It's just the acknowledgement that there are multiple holidays happening at this time of year that are being celebrated. And it's just saying Happy Holidays, which includes Christmas. Christmas, the one that we all know, is the one that is the loudest, most obnoxious, because Christians just can't conceive of a world where they're not the fucking center of attention and the thing that everyone's talking about all the time. But that is the world we live in. We live in a world where, like, there are many holidays being celebrated. There's Hanukkah, there's winter solstice, there's Kwanzaa. There are many different things that people are celebrating at this time of year. We want to be inclusive because we live in an ideologically pluralistic nation, a nation that is supposed to not be a theocratic nation. We live in a world that is ideologically pluralistic, and we just want to be inclusive. So when we tell someone a phrase that is intended to mean, I hope you have a nice time the next few weeks, I hope you get together with your family and exchange gifts or have a nice meal or drink eggnog or watch movies or do whatever it is that you do with the people that you love at this time of year, I hope you have a nice time. This time of year can be very gloomy, very depressing. I hope you have a nice one. This batch of holidays that includes Thanksgiving too and New Year's, this batch of time where we have a bunch of holidays that are all happening, I hope you have a happy time. But they are so triggered by the idea that we wouldn't just say only Christmas and no other things. It's the exact same thing that happens with, like, people being triggered by Black Lives Matter. The implication with Black Lives Matter has always been Black Lives Matter also. The implication has always been we understand that everyone in America agrees that white lives matter. That's very, very clear. What we're trying to say is we need to all get on the same page that black lives also matter. And white conservative Christian people lost their fucking shit because they were like, huh? What? I'm not the center of attention in this thing? And it's like, you're actually included in it because the implication is black lives matter too, which means you already matter, and we're just trying to include these other lives which have been so drastically marginalized for so long. But so they came up with the phrase all lives matter, which was a dog whistle for white lives matter. Again, Kanye being bad at dog whistles, he can't just say all lives matter. He has to come out with a shirt that says white lives matter because he's not good at dog whistles. But that was what the dog whistle of all lives matter always was. They didn't, when they said all lives matter, they didn't mean trans people. They didn't mean non-binary people. They didn't mean Muslim people. They didn't mean really brown people of any kind. They meant white people. They meant white lives matter because they hated the fact that there was a movement that wasn't centered on them. And it's the exact same thing with Happy Holidays. You are included. That's what inclusive means. It means including you. You are included. And also, you are, as we've discussed, you are dominating this season. You are the most public-facing, up-close-and-personal, up-in-everyone-shit thing. Rockefeller Center does not have a giant 50-foot menorah in its plaza. It has a giant 50-foot Christmas tree. You are more than included. And it's one phrase that people are trying to use to just acknowledge the existence of other people, and you all can't handle it. You cannot handle it. So this is his solution.
But don't worry, I've come up with the perfect season's greeting that includes people of all races, religion, weights, and genders. Have a f***ing December. Have a f***ing December.
I'm gonna be honest, just like I was with the Bill O'Reilly clip, I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that ending, with Tom McDonald saying that his solution is, instead of saying anything, I'm gonna say, Have a fucking December. Go ahead. By all means. You're allowed. You are allowed. If that's the greeting you want to greet people with, by all means. But if you're doing that because you legitimately think that you're not allowed to say Merry Christmas, go fuck yourself, my guy. Absolutely go fuck yourself. What in the fuck are you talking about? You can say Merry Christmas. That is fine. And you can also say Happy Holidays. That is also fine. There is nothing wrong with that phrase. There's nothing wrong with just trying to just be open to acknowledging that other people exist. Man, the desire that these people have to be persecuted, to have something to fight against, to have something that makes them matter, to have something that makes their ideas and their ideology feel special and like they have a fight to fight against. It's so strong that it has them living in a fantasy land. They don't see that, like, they won. They're sitting at the top of the pyramid, just clearly. And the only reason why we're trying to be more inclusive in our language is, yeah, maybe partially because we are trying to lessen the influence of Christian nationalism at the governmental level for very good reasons, because we can see from countries like Iran and Afghanistan that theocratic rule, authoritarian theocratic rule, is not a good idea. We're totally all right with you being Christian. We're totally all right with you celebrating Christmas. We're totally all right with you saying fucking Merry Christmas and watching every goddamn Christmas movie and listening to every Christmas song. We're okay with it. We just don't want our laws to be written in a way that makes everyone have to live their lives according to your specific beliefs. That's all. We just want to live in a world where we acknowledge the fact that there are, like, a whole lot of us that aren't Christian, that we exist too. That's it. We're just asking for a place at the table with you. And it's a bridge too far. That asking for that concession is tantamount to a declaration of war. Saying, can I just be included here as a person who doesn't believe in God or Jesus? Is there a way for me to be included in this that doesn't make it so that I have to be beholden to your particular belief set? Just saying that is a declaration of all-out war. It is a violent, vitriolic attack. The audacity of these people to pretend that anyone other than them is the snowflakes of society, that anyone other than them is easily triggered. These are the most easily triggered, most sensitive people on the planet. They have everything. And the idea of just acknowledging that other people exist is too much for them. Let's see here. I'm going to go to the comments now. I've been talking for over an hour. Let's do it. Francis Matthew says, it's because they are not confident in their beliefs. I can see that, because that's the thing where Bill O'Reilly is wrong. Is Bill O'Reilly, he says that the reason why the war on Christmas exists is because the secular progressives are trying to slowly erase Christianity from the public sphere so that they can institute more progressive policies. That's not entirely incorrect. What is incorrect is that the implication that follows with Bill O'Reilly's rhetoric and with the rhetoric of people like Tucker Carlson and with the rhetoric of people like Sean Hannity is that the overall goal is to erase Christianity altogether, to eliminate Christian people from the face of the planet. So there is this fear and insecurity in this persecution complex of, like, if I cede even the smallest bit of ground to you, by just saying happy holidays, by just being able to just say one thing that isn't keeping Christmas at the front and center of this time of year, if I just cede that one little teeny tiny space to you, it's only a matter of time before you've completely erased me and everyone like me from the face of the planet. And that's not my personal goal. I think there's a whole other episode we could do about how, like, I think humanity probably will naturally evolve and progress if we make it this far. If the planet doesn't die before then, we will naturally progress to being a secular species. Just that as we get more information and as we become a smarter species, the natural result of that is that we will be a less superstitious society and a less religious society. But that's not necessarily, like, an agenda or a goal. I don't want it to happen violently. I don't want there to be like a genocide of Christian people. I want my Christian friends and family to be able to believe whatever works for them. I just don't want them to be dicks about it. I also think that there's something that this question could be alluding to, or that this comment could be alluding to, that pertains to the lack of confidence that certain people might have in their own personal faith. I don't want to actually comment on the veracity of someone's faith claim. If someone tells me, hey, I really deeply, truly, personally believe that Jesus Christ is my savior, I don't want to call them a liar. I see believers do that a lot for atheists. They'll be like, I don't really believe that you're an atheist. I think that you wouldn't be this worked up over it if you didn't secretly believe. And that's sort of like a thing that they need to tell themselves to reckon with the fact that atheists exist. So I don't want to do that to believers, but I could see how needing their religion to be front and center, needing their figurehead, Jesus Christ, to be at the front and center of everything could be tied to their own insecurity in their faith. That when they are confronted with the reality of ideological pluralism, when they are confronted with the reality that other people have beliefs that they hold just as near and dear to their hearts as they hold to their belief in Jesus, it makes them feel like their belief is maybe less special and less unique and less domineering, and that hurts their testimony in whatever the thing is that they believe in. And I think an argument could be made that that shows the fragility of those beliefs, potentially, in some people. Loma1675 on TikTok says, who's the ones throwing temper tantrums because they can't handle it? Not Christian conservatives. Thank you. Someone just threw a fun Rudolph decoration on my head. It's almost, again, the filter, right? I talked about the filter of people like not being able to see the Christmas decorations in front of their faces, and people not being able to like hear all of the titles of all of those movies I just read off. It's almost like everything I just said wasn't processed. So this person, all this person sees is me being like upset about this stupid idea, this idea that we've lived with for the last 20 years, and really this idea that's been pervasive in our culture for the last 100 years, that like Christmas is under attack, even though it is just the most popular fucking thing that humans do on a yearly basis. And he sees my frustration with that, and his response to that is, well, who's having the tantrum? Not us. And it's like, no, the whole reason I'm upset is because of your tantrum. My tantrum would not exist without your tantrum. Your tantrum is the reason why my tantrum exists. I had this thought recently about like Forrest Valkai was on my show last week. We talked about atheism. He is a sometimes host of a show called The Atheist Experience. And I had this thought about how people often characterize atheists, and they say that the thing that bothers them about atheists is that atheists always seem kind of like angry and arrogant and annoyed whenever they're like debating with theists. And I think that part of the reason they seem annoyed or put off or put out or frustrated or like arrogant or like unwilling to just have like a civil conversation is because they are so tired of the same arguments over and over and over. They are so tired of debunking the same bad arguments over and over and over again ad nauseum. That show, The Atheist Experience, that Forrest Valkai is a part-time host on. It's been a show for 20 years. We talked about this on the show last year. And for 20 years, people have been calling into that show to try to convince the atheist hosts on the show that they should believe in God. And they use the exact same arguments every single time. And frequently, people will call in and be like, hey, I've been listening to this show for a while. I think you guys are really smart people, really open-minded people. And I think I've got the thing that's going to prove that God exists for you. And they're always like, please, by all means, I genuinely hope you're going to have something that I haven't heard before. And instantly, they start in with something that's like, nope, right off the bat. And most commonly what they'll do is they'll like quote the Bible. They'll like use a Bible quote that proves that God exists. They'll be like, see, it says right here in the Bible that this thing couldn't have existed without a creator. And that's how we know. And it's like, holy shit. How after all of this time, after the show's been going for 20 years, after you've presumably watched several episodes of it, are you not aware that you reading the Bible to us does not qualify as empirical evidence? How are you not aware of that? And that's where that frustration comes from. That's where that like annoyed attitude that's sort of off-putting to some people comes from is just the feeling of being like, I don't know how else to say this. I don't know how many times I can deal with this same bad argument. I don't know how many times I can tell someone that me reading Harry Potter to them is not proof that Harry Potter exists, that me reading The Lord of the Rings to them is not proof that Middle Earth exists. Like, I don't know how many times I can point that out and still not, and not be mad about it. Me being mad about this made up war on Christmas is because for the last 20 years, like clockwork, every fucking year, I've had to listen to conservative Christians lose their shit over this thing that does not exist. This thing that so obviously does not exist. So yes, I'm throwing a tantrum. I'm upset. I'm mad that for 20 years, you have made people like me go, there's a fucking Christmas tree right there. That person at that store just said to you, Merry Christmas, and you said it back to them. It just happened, and no one got mad at you. You say Merry Christmas 500 times every December, and no one has ever told you that that's offensive to them. This thing that you are insisting is a problem is so obviously not a real problem. And the frustration that you are seeing from people like me is just that we're fucking tired. And we're just baffled. We're just baffled at how you can be so immensely dense. How it can just bounce off of your face. That you can't see that, like, the entire reason we're having this conversation right now is because you insist that we live in a world that does not allow people to say Merry Christmas and that does not allow people to outwardly celebrate Christmas. And that's just a fucking insane thing to think. That's just insane. It's just an insane thing to think. So yes, it is conservative Christians who are the ones throwing the tantrum. Yearly, on a yearly basis, like clockwork, every year, throwing a tantrum about a thing that does not exist. And those of us who live in objective reality and don't have the filters that you have in your brain, those of us that can see the 50-foot Christmas tree in Rockefeller Center, those of us that can hear the Christmas songs on the radio, and those of us that can see that every movie that comes out at this time of year has Christmas in the title, those of us that can actually grapple with reality are just fucking tired of having to explain this to you. I don't actually expect that any of what I just said to get through to the person who left that comment, but yeah. Oh, here he is. He's back. Nope. Show me one conservative Christian in the streets, shouting at the top of their lungs over Merry Christmas. I just showed you in this podcast that video of Tom McDonald saying, oh, so we can't say Merry Christmas anymore? Oh, so we can't say Merry Christmas anymore? I talked to you about the fact that, like, Walter Masterson did that whole series in New York City interviewing people and saying, doesn't it frustrate you that we can't have Christmas decorations anymore? And them agreeing with you. Like, watch Fox News one day in December. Watch Fox News for one day. Every year, like clockwork, they will do segments every fucking day of end of Thanksgiving through December about the war on Christmas. It is one of their big, like, biggest, hottest topics at this time of the year. This is not a thing that I'm just making up. This is a very, very popular thing that you do. And you're denying that it exists because you don't have a counterargument. You're flailing. You're grasping at straws. The mechanism in your brain that has been, that you have designed to protect you from ever being wrong won't allow you to engage with objective reality. It won't allow you to engage with the fact that, like, conservatives thinking that there is a war on Christmas and being objectively wrong about that is a thing, is a real thing. So you're at a place right now where you're literally denying that conservatives talking about the war on Christmas is even a thing. That's how, like, entrenched you are in this mechanism of protecting yourself from being wrong. That's how thick these filters are, is that you will pretend that everything I'm saying isn't true because the alternative is acknowledging that I have a point, and that's not an option for you. It really is a wild psychological phenomenon to witness. Like, it's like you have a filter over your brain that does not allow you to see things that don't jive with your ideology. It's a trip. It is a trip. Pembroke Love on YouTube's got a story here. There was a school district who widely reported that a minority Muslim population at the school made them remove Christmas from the school calendars. What actually happened was that they asked for Ramadan to be put on the calendar, and when the school said no, they said, but you have Christmas. Why can't you put on ours too? And the district elected to remove Christmas. When they told the parents and students that the Muslims had attacked Christmas, they were primed to believe that as well. And then they correct themselves and said, although I said the wrong Muslim holiday, sorry, my bad. But yeah, exactly. And that's exactly how stuff like this happens. Is someone goes, hey, is there a way that we can be a little bit more inclusive with our language around this holiday? Is there a way that we can include people who aren't just Christians, that we can have like terminology or practices that at schools and in public spaces that include more than just one holiday? And Christians interpret that as all out warfare on their thing, as the woke left that includes, you know, the Jews and the Muslims and the atheists attacking them and trying to contribute to their cultural erasure. Even though really all that's happening is just people are just simply asking to be allowed to be acknowledged at all in any way, in any significant way. And it's actually really funny that the school district opted to just take Christmas off the calendar instead of including the Muslim holiday. Like that's really funny too. And that's very America too. They'd be like, well, I don't want to put some Muslim holiday on the calendar. So I guess fine. If we're going to be fair, we'll take Christmas off the calendar. And it also like allows them to contribute to this narrative that there is a war on Christmas. It allows them to lean into their favorite thing, which is made up persecution complexes. Brownie Sin on YouTube says it's boring at the top. And I think that is part of it too. Is like, it must be. It's just like, you must be bored. You must just be so bored with like nothing to actually get upset about, no real problems, that you just invent problems. What's weird is like, I feel like there are actual things that conservatives could spend their time getting mad about and freaking out about. I feel like there are actual things that they could be criticizing, and they always spend their time freaking out about things that aren't real and contending with arguments that they've made up in their heads. And like going back to the trans discussion and argument, it's like every time I talk to someone about this, I'm hoping that they bring me an argument that I haven't heard yet. And I'm hoping that they bring me something that's actually rooted in the real conversation. And I'm always so disappointed when they've spent their time and their energy crafting an argument that is responding to nothing that anyone is at, like, that's just responding to a made up argument that they're like, check this out. And they respond to it. I'm like, you're not responding to the actual discussion. You're not responding to the actual issue. You're responding to made up aspects of the discussion that you've created because you don't know how to respond to the actual discussion, I guess. I don't know, but it's really frustrating. That, again, contributes to the frustration that you see with me right now. Jay Brewer says, they can say Merry Christmas as long as I can say Merry Yule. We both smile and go about our lives. Yeah, that's the thing, too, is like, if you're a person who doesn't like saying Merry Christmas out there who's listening to this, that's also fine. I just say Merry Christmas because I have a lot of friends who celebrate it. I have a lot of Christian friends. And like, I also say Happy Holidays. I say both. When I'm talking to a person I don't know, I always say Happy Holidays. And when I'm talking to someone who I know has Christmas in their culture, was raised celebrating Christmas, or like is actively Christian, I say Merry Christmas. And it's no sweat off my back or off my brow. I don't care. But if you're a person who's like, I don't like saying it, I want to say my thing, that's also fine. And Christians always talk about how people get offended when you say Merry Christmas. Again, I don't think that this is a real thing. I don't think that this person who's been commenting on TikTok or any of the Christians that we're talking about, like Tom McDonald or any of these people, have actually been in public and said Merry Christmas and had a person say, hey, that's really offensive to me. That really offends me. I don't think that that's actually a thing that's happened. However, I do believe that if a Christian said Merry Christmas and you said Merry Yule, you'd be much more likely to have the Christian person be upset. You'd be much, much, much more likely if it was like a conservative Christian, Trump loving, America loving person, and you said like, if they said Merry Christmas and you said like, oh, Happy Holidays, or like Happy Hanukkah, or Merry Yule, you would be much more likely to see that person get offended and lose their shit. So much of the stuff that they talk about when it comes to, you know, the left being snowflakes and too sensitive and getting offended too easily is like the utmost projection. It is just absolute projection. Like they talk about, they get mad about the things that they do, you know? Someone says, Austin, I love your jacket. Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know what? I'm going to keep the conversation going on TikTok because we got a lot of people here and we got a lively discussion here. But I think I'm going to wrap up the podcast. I think that's it. I think that's it. I think we got some good feedback in the comments. I think I said most of the stuff that I wanted to say. I talked a lot. I said a lot of shit. So thank you. Thanks for hanging out on YouTube. Thank you for hanging out on TikTok. Thank you for the comments. Thank you for the feedback. Even the conservative people, stay on TikTok if you want. I'm going to stay in here and chit chat. People on YouTube, you can head over to TikTok if you want and join us. But I'm going to, there's a good conversation going. So I'm going to stay and chit chat. But I'm going to wrap up the podcast here. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com or looking up Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music, all those places. Hey, patreon.com/AustinArcher. Want to get me something for the Yule or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Christmas or the holiday season? Want to get me a gift? Subscribe to my Patreon, patreon.com/AustinArcher. We'd love to have you over there. Or, you know, order a cameo from me. I'm on Cameo. You can get someone a cameo from me. That'd be fun. Do that. That'll be cool. I don't know. Whatever. Love you, Patreon patrons. Love you so much for all of your support this year, and I hope we keep on rocking in the new year. Everybody be safe out there. Have a good one. Have a Merry Christmas. Have a Happy Hanukkah. Have a happy whatever you celebrate. Solstice, Yule, whatever it is that's your thing. I hope you have a good time. And a happy new year. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you next time. Love you. Bye-bye. Our cheeks